Thank you, Your Honor, and members of the court. My name is John Vaught, and I'm with Wheeler, Trigg & O'Donnell, and I represent Mark Schoen, the appellant. Members of the court, in recognizing the importance of one's reputation, as it has been recognized in the common law, and more specifically, how important it is that this broad right be continued and perpetuated in American jurisprudence, Justice Erickson said, in quoting others in the Keanu decision, one sentence that I think capsulizes why this remedy is so important. And what he said is, in modern times, the potential for the careless or worse, the intentional falsehood to destroy livelihoods, disrupt families, and damage friendships and reputations has been viewed almost without exception by American and English courts as so serious a wrong that no judicial system would dare abandon a remedy for it. But in this regard, and true to that policy, there have been recognized essentially three exceptions to that right, that is the right to defend one's reputation. Two of those deal with media defendants, and because we don't have an immediate defendant, they're not really applicable, although they may be instructive as well. But the one that is of issue in this case is the third and the most narrow of the limitations, and that's based on the concept that even a private citizen can get so embroiled in a public concern and become a public figure by stirring the pot of public concern for the purpose of influencing the outcome just prior to the defamatory comment, to the point that that voluntary participant virtually invites comment, invites even slanderous and defamatory comment. It is the most narrow of the limitations, and for good reason. It is virtually the death knell of a private defamation case. That is, by shifting the burden, which is traditionally the affirmative defense to prove the truth of the statement. That is, the defaming party typically has the affirmative defense to step forward to prove what I've said is true. Whereas under this limited circumstance that I'm describing about public figures, the burden shifts and the burden increases. You now must prove by clear and convincing evidence, that is, the defamed party must prove by clear and convincing evidence of the falsity of the claim and that it was made with actual malice. And
Mr. Vaught, before this broadcast, how much was this in contemporary public discussion?
The evidence is that there was none. Mark Schoen had been virtually invisible living in Arizona for the previous 21 years, and he's lived in Arizona all his life. There was nothing in the record to reflect any comment by Mark Schoen at all, and this tabloid press is the first thing that came up.
Nowhere in the country. There was no public discussion about this anywhere in the country.
All I can say is none in the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
So what Justice Erickson noted about that is important here is that it is all but impossible to prove a private defamation case once this limitation applies, and that's true even in a defamation per se case, he said. And Justice Rivera cautioned for the same reasons. What he said is this burden shifting is so devastating that we must be, as he put it, not too easily to conclude that one is a public figure.
Now, counsel, if I understand that the trial court concluded that the matter was of public concern and that Mark Schoen was this limited public figure, if we agree with the trial court that the matter concerned or had to do with the public concern, do we need to reach the second issue and why?
I think absolutely we do, because the two are so intertwined, and I think Justice Rivera's opinion really probably uses the term private individual in a slightly different way than I think it came out. But the answer is, Judge Fox, absolutely, and the reason is this. The two are intertwined. Is to be a public figure, you must be speaking about a public concern. You can't separate one from the other. Moreover, if all it took is a public concern to trigger this limitation, if you think about it, given Judge Trump's ruling that a crime is a matter of public concern, if public concern is the only threshold issue, then everybody can be defamed, even if they haven't done anything to step forward and inject themselves into the circumstance. You must satisfy both, and they are extremely intertwined. What happened in this case, though, is that Judge Trump made basically three important errors of law that are subject to de novo review. In fact, as I'm going to address five issues, but on this point, three important. First, and I'm now referring to page 4 of his order of November 2010. What he said was, in adopting a bright line test for public concern, he concluded in a single sentence, that any defamatory remark about a crime is, as a matter of law, a matter of public concern. Such a ruling is not supported, and I will address the case in a moment, but it is directly contrary to this court's opinion in Williams versus Continental, and I'll address that in a moment as well. Second error of law, he concluded that Mark Schoen was a public figure for two reasons, and he addressed it in two sentences. What he said was, 21 years ago, he filed a defamation claim against his father, and secondly, he filed a civil action in this case after the defaming comment, and that those two factors made him a public figure. That is, by simply filing civil actions to redress his reputation. Mark became a public figure, Judge Schrum concluded, by these two civil action filings to literally invite defamation of his reputation and his character, the third error of law. And by implication, what Judge Trump's ruling is that Sam Schoen was permitted to create a defense to defamation based on his own conduct in the tabloid press, not Mark's conduct. Rather, the actions of Mark must be the focus of the ruling. And I'm going to tell you in a moment, citing the case, that a defense based on one's own conduct, that is, the slander and party's conduct, has been expressly rejected in Colorado. Let me first talk about public concern, if I could, and what it is specifically that Judge Schrum did wrong. As Justice Erickson has pointed out to us, public concern is not easily defined. It's harder to put your hands around. And what happened here, though, for Judge Schrum, is he elected to use a bright line test. Even though everybody else who's addressed it says how difficult it is, he said the bright line test is this. And in one sentence analysis, if it involves a crime, it's a matter of public concern. And no opinion, including the Bowers case, on which he relied, supports that. Because let me tell you about Bowers just for a moment. There, it was a media defendant, slightly different case, but the media had quoted from a police report about an ongoing criminal investigation. The court concluded, without analysis, that when a media quote pulled from a police file in an active criminal investigation is a matter of concern, public concern. I have no disagreement with that conclusion. Nor did that court or any court ever say that as a result, that if in fact you have a public comment by a private citizen about a crime, it is per se public concern. And if you think about it, in today's modern era, virtually all defamation per se cases touch upon a crime. Even if that Judge Trump's rule of law is the law in the state, what we're really saying is every time someone asserts a defamation per se claim, they automatically have satisfied, because it involves a crime, they automatically satisfy the threshold of public concern. That is not the law in this state.
Counsel,
yes.
If I could, this isn't exactly dealing with the question you're raising, but I have a concern I want to have
sure.
you respond to. I understand that the jury, in responding, I think interrogatory number 2, said that there were no damages resulting from the statement. And my question, I got two questions. One, did the plaintiff object in any way to that verdict form? And second, why doesn't that dispose of all this? Why do we need to get into public concern and all the other issues if the jury said there's no damages?
Well, the objection that led to what I think is preserved here is that the public figure issue, the public concern issues were errors of law. Let me tell you, the reading of this jury verdict form, and I think this is very important, is first of all, once there is a finding of defamation per se, and that's what happened here, the fact of damage is established. Not the extent of damage. The fact of damage is established. One is defamed in a defamation per se case. And so at least there should have been a $1 entry in this matter. Secondly, the judge, there is no concern about that jury verdict form if, in fact, the jury could somehow compartmentalize this in a way that I think they can't do. And that is, once they're instructed, this is a public figure, and therefore you should assume he's got very thick skin, and that's erroneous in this case, and you couple that with that he has to prove, essentially, he wasn't capable of committing this murder, and they fail to do that, I think the jury, of course, concluded there were no damages in this case. So the error of laws that preceded it is...
Was there an objection to that, to the verdict form?
Your Honor, I can't specifically address that I know that on this jury verdict form that such an objection was made about that line. But I do know that the preserved errors of law that led to that jury were definitely objected. I simply can't address it, and I apologize.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, well, let me go back to public concern and finish that up. Because what the court said in Williams versus Continental is just the opposite of what Judge Shum here had concluded. And that is, first, it concluded that public concern is always a case-by-case analysis. Always. There is no sweeping rule of law about what's a public concern, unlike Judge Shum's verdict or his judgment. Second, Williams versus Continental, which was a private party versus private party case, very close to our circumstance, specifically dealt the allegation of a rape and attempted rape, both heinous crimes. And in that, in the face of these heinous crimes, the court said, no public concern. And so what else do we know about the analysis of public concern? We know from the Colorado Supreme Court case in the diversified management that public concern must, one, have independent value at the time of the publication. Two, that the mere fact the press was attracted to the story after the defaming remark doesn't tell us a thing about whether it was a public concern or not. And three, that the proper analysis is a three-pronged analysis, that you must look at the content, you must look at the form, and you must look at the point of the publication. Had the trial court here conducted that three-part analysis, rather than simply concluded, oh, it's about a crime and therefore it's public concern, that they would have realized that this was not a search for the truth, because all of the U-Haul family had been exonerated years ago, 22 years earlier, by the San Miguel Sheriff's Office. Sam Schoen here was not urging anyone to reopen an investigation. The San Miguel Sheriff had never urged in the last 22 years anyone reopen an investigation. And Sam Schoen clearly could have said in an interview, in a public tabloid press interview, that he wanted the interview or the investigation reopened without offending his brother. What they would have realized if that three-part analysis had been done is that the point, the motivation here, was to do nothing but to hurt his brother. And that is reversible error. So let's turn, if we could, to the public figure issue. Again, what we know is that it is subject to review de novo. It is a question of law. And we know from the Gertz case of the U.S. Supreme Court that a limited public figure, and that's what we're addressing here, we're not addressing Bill Clinton or Mitt Romney, that it is one who voluntarily thrust themselves into the forefront of the particular public controversy in order to influence the resolution of the issue that's being addressed. Lord Churchill, maybe, Dan Candy of Chick-fil-A, perhaps. But a public figure is one who invites public attention and comment and seeks to influence the public on that debate. That's not Mark Schoen. He was literally invisible here for the previous 22 years, living in Arizona at the time that he was defamed.
So the injecting, is your argument, the injecting has to happen before the alleged defamation?
Absolutely. You have to invite the defamation, essentially, to get this limitation to apply, and that isn't what Mark did.
Was there any evidence that Mark had stirred the pot, raised this issue again somehow?
The evidence in the record is absolutely no effort. No effort. As they warn, though, those charged with defamation cannot, and I'm quoting from Judge Rivera's opinion, cannot, by their own conduct, create their own defense and make the other party a public defense. But that's what Sam did here. He's the one who went to the press and created and injected himself into the issue. It wasn't Mark Schoen, and it must be Mark Schoen. So, in a nutshell...
I thought the press contacted Sam. The record otherwise?
Oh, no, they contacted Sam. I'm saying Sam, by appearing at that tabloid press interview, injected himself into the issue, but Mark Schoen didn't. And it must be Mark Schoen who's injecting himself in the issue for the public limitation to apply. Let me simply say that, in a nutshell, Judge Shum's analysis is two sentences, and all he says is, he filed civil action 21 years ago, and he filed civil action after this case. If that's the rule of law, anyone who files a civil action to protect his reputation is a public figure in this state. There is no such rule of law. Last thing I'm going to address is the Section 150, and that is, one never has to check on the civil cover sheet what law applies. It is not an issue that comes to the floor. It is not an issue, if you will, until there's a difference between the law you want applied and the law that is being applied. The first time there's any difference in this case is after he rules, that is Judge Shum rules, public concern, public figure. At that point, you have a difference, a substantive difference between the law of Colorado and Arizona, and that's at the point that we raise the choice of law issue. That was preserved for this record.
Wasn't that issue, though, if I may, wasn't that issue raised in connection with the defenses, both the initial defense as well as once there was a, I think there was an amendment, right?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe there was a substantive difference as to those defenses until we got to the public, in the public figure defense. All right. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Billy George Hertzke, and I represent Dr. Samuel Schoen in this matter. Today, I'd first like to discuss the statements that Dr. Schoen made in their full context, because I don't think that has been done at all in either the briefing that was submitted by Mark Schoen or in argument today. And it's very important that the context is taken into consideration. I'll then address how the context applies to the issues of public concern and limited purpose public figure, and then move on to the choice of law argument that Mr. Vogt briefly discussed at the end here today. When I was preparing for this oral argument, I was struck by the lack of context that was given to the court with respect to Dr. Schoen's statements that he gave in the interview for Tragedy and Telluride. As Judge Fox correctly pointed out, the producers contacted Dr. Schoen and told him that they were doing a show about the murder of his wife and that they were going to do the show if he participated or if he did not participate. Dr. Schoen sat down for a two-hour interview, an interview that the jury watched in its entirety during the trial, an interview that is part of the record in this case. It was Exhibit 200 at trial. And from that interview, the producers of Tragedy and Telluride took out a very small portion and intertwined it into the production that became Tragedy and Telluride. And it's undisputed that Dr. Schoen had nothing to do with the final production and the editing of Tragedy and Telluride. When Dr. Schoen sat down for his interview, he answered the questions that were asked of him. And towards the beginning of his interview, he was asked questions about the sheriff's investigation and the evidence. And Dr. Schoen responded by commenting on the evidence and the sheriff's final determination.
Dr. Schoen, once the show was broadcast, complain or send a letter off saying this wasn't a fair summary of what I said? Or
he did not.
Okay.
And in fact, they did call Dr. Schoen and ask if he saw the show, and he said that he did see the show, and he did not make any comments to him at that time. And Dr. Schoen is not disputing that he made those comments. It's just a matter in the way that the comments were spliced and taken from different parts of his interview. And then the court decided that certain statements as they appeared in Tragedy and Telluride were going to be the statements at issue and not the entire statements as he made them in his interview. And so Mark Schoen is taking issue with statements that were made in the edited form as opposed to how the statements were actually made. And it's important for the purposes of the public figure and matter of public concern argument to take them in their entirety. Because when Dr. Schoen was talking about the evidence, such as the injection sites and the missing piece of bed sheet, he was talking about a matter of public concern, and that was the sheriff's investigation into the murder. He was not talking about Mark Schoen. He was not talking about Mark Schoen being a perpetrator in this crime. And for the purposes of that statement B, which in jury instruction 8, it's statement B, that deals with the piece of bloody bed sheet, that is a statement about a matter of public concern, specifically the job that Sheriff Masters did in his investigators into the murder of his wife.
So how is this a matter of public concern? I mean, this crime happened years before. I don't even know if it was the sheriff still in office at the time. How doesn't it have to be a matter of contemporary public concern?
Not when Dr. Schoen is talking about the evidence at the time and what he currently believes the evidence shows. And Dr. Schoen does not believe that Frank Marquis was the only person that was in the home that night. He is convinced that there had to have been more than one person. And the reason is because Marquis says, I didn't do those.
Why does the public have any interest in this? I mean, I understand our tabloid TV, but how is this a matter of public concern 15 years later?
I think the public always has an interest in knowing whether or not law enforcement officers are bringing a tidy into a case because they want to put it behind them and they're ignoring evidence. And that's really what's at issue in this respect with the piece of bloody bed sheet and the needle marks.
But I mean, excuse me, man, because you continually go back to the facts of it, and the premise seems to be that the public, as a general matter, is entitled to always be concerned about all criminal investigations and about whether they were done well or poorly, and it doesn't matter how long ago the investigation happened, or even if it was the most minor of private investigations. Is that what the law is? Just generically, all murders are matters of public concern forever thereafter.
Yes, I believe that the U.S. Supreme Court in Garrison versus Louisiana made that announcement. In Garrison, the U.S. Supreme Court said that commentary of the work performed by a public official is a matter of public concern.
Forever.
It did put no temporal limitation on it.
And we are to interpret that to mean forever.
Correct. For example, if we were to talk about the investigation, for example, into the O.J. Simpson case or the assassination of JFK, people are still going to be permitted to freely...
Wasn't that a matter of national public concern at the time, and O.J. Simpson still in the news, and of course the assassination of a president is of course a matter of public concern. The assassination of a man's wife in Telluride 15 years ago, how is that a matter of contemporary, and if I'm wrong on this need for contemporaneous, but...
I have found no case law that says anything about the need being contemporaneous. The laws that comes from the U.S. Supreme Court is that if you're speaking about a public official and their performance of their official duties, that is a matter of public concern. And if I can distinguish the Williams case that counsel raised, that was a case where there was no filing of criminal charges. That truly was an issue where the flight attendants and the pilot were having their dispute within the company of Continental Airlines, and there was not an official filing of charges. If you compare that to the DeLeo case, I'm sorry, Quigley versus Rosenthal, which is a federal district court case here in Colorado, the court noted that once the charges were actually filed, a private dispute then becomes a matter of public concern because Investigators and the district attorney are now involved, and now we've elevated this into more of a Bauer situation, which is an actual ongoing criminal matter.
So your position would be that the trial court was correct, that the investigation of all crimes, I mean, it could be a shoplifting crime, I suppose, investigation of all crimes and the quality of the investigation is a matter of general public concern under all circumstances for defamation.
That is correct. And if you were to apply the argument that Mr. Mark Schoen advances in this case, and that is he uses terms like this is a long solved case. This case has been solved for a long time. And if this court were to apply his reasoning, then the result would be a precedent saying that once the official investigators reach a conclusion, then no one else can ever talk about it again, because whatever they have to say and their official conclusion is the way it is. And no one who wishes to comment on anything that investigative agency or the prosecutor did after the time that they officially closed their case is no longer protected by the First Amendment and free speech.
Is there anything in the record that indicates why this documentary, what caused the producers to want to do this documentary at the point in time?
You know, I don't believe that there is. And these television shows, this particular one no longer airs, but they do still air on True TV in reruns. And I don't know why. In fact, I do think that one of the producers said that they were kicking some ideas around and they're looking for the stories of crimes involving the rich and famous, and this one came up and they thought it would be a good story. I do recall now that one of the producers did say that.
So what about Mark being a limited public figure?
Again, going back to the context of how that statement came up, the interviewer asked Dr. Schoen, he said, didn't your father, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you have the actual interview, didn't your father say that he believed that one or more of his sons was involved in the murder back in 1990 just after the murder happened? And Sam, just answering the question, not going out of his way to defame his brother, said, that is what my father said, and he certainly believed that. Then the interviewer asked the next question is, well, did you believe that? And Sam said, well, I didn't know. I knew that they were capable of it, and anyone you talk to will tell you that, but whether or not they did it, I don't know.
Well, but that goes to the merits of whether this was defamation. How is it that Mark was a limited public figure when a crime happened 15 years ago, somebody else was convicted of it, and I mean, if he were running for state senate, you know, maybe he then becomes a public figure. But what was he doing that made him a public figure?
Because the question, as it was asked by the interviewer, took Sam back in time to answer that question back when his father was making the statement that he believed that one of his sons were involved. And so then,
how does that make Mark a public figure at the time of this defamation?
Because once you're a limited purpose public figure, you remain a public figure for that particular controversy. And at the time that L.S. Schoen made the comments that he believed one or more of his sons were involved in this murder, Mark was literally front page news in the Wall Street Journal, and in the record there's the actual
and he had initiated that. He had thrust himself into this subject,
into the dispute over the U-Haul shares. There's no doubt that all of the Schoens were thrusting themselves into the controversy involving the dispute over the U-Haul shares. And then during the middle of this, the murder happens. And all of that is intertwined. And so when Dr. Schoen is commenting 15 years later on the same topic, he's doing so in the very limited realm of the situation as it was in the early 1990s. In the Street case, which I've cited for you, is the one where the woman who claimed that she was raped by the Scottsboro Boys 40 years ago, and then in the 1970s, the producers of NBC decided they're going to do a movie about it. And she says, well, wait a minute, I'm not a public figure. This was 40 years ago. And what that Federal Circuit Court of Appeals decided was that she's maybe not a public figure in all sense in 1977, but if you're talking about the particular issue in which she was a public figure back in the 1930s, she remains a public figure for that particular controversy. And the controversy that was being asked about in the interview was L.S. Schoen's statements at the time that Mark Schoen was a public figure with respect to the U-Haul dispute intertwined with the murder that took place at that same time. And if this court were to decide that a limited purpose public figure does not remain a public figure over time, it would be in the minority of one. All of the jurisdictions that have decided this issue have decided, with the exception of possibly one federal district court, all of the federal circuits and the Circuit of DC have decided that once you're a limited purpose public figure, you remain a limited purpose public figure for later commentary on that issue that made you a limited purpose
public figure. Is it correct that this person who is the limited public figure has to have initiated putting himself out in public view?
Well, they have to be a limited purpose public figure at the initial stage.
I understand.
Right.
And so that they had to put themselves out in public view at that time.
Correct. That would make them a public figure. And in this case, all of the Schoen family members, by getting embroiled in this dispute over U-Haul, and then even, in fact, after the murder of Ava Schoen, Mark Schoen sent investigators to Telluride at his direction and offered his help and offered the help of U-Haul investigators to Sheriff Masters. So certainly at that time he was interjecting himself into the murder of Ava Schoen back in 1990.
One quick question. What is your position on if we agree that the matter concerned was of public concern, whether we need to reach the next issue, which is Mark's status?
Correct. I don't think that you do, because if you look at jury instruction 22.2, it specifically says that it applies to matters of public concern or when a public figure is involved. So it's either or. In this case, we actually have both of them. So there's no we cover both bases.
Thank you, Mr. Hertzke. Thank you, Mr. Vaught. Yes, please.
It's the McIntyre case, which is McIntyre versus Jones, and that is 194 P3rd 519 at 525.
Thank you.
That's in your brief, right, counsel?
It is. Yeah. And as the court will note, Judge Shum was also the trial judge in the McIntyre case.
Thank you both, counsel. Your presentations were excellent, and we're grateful that you've given us such good information. The case is now submitted. We will address it and issue an opinion in due course. That ends our